Welcome to episode number 37 of the Mitch and Neil's Bull Show. My name is Mitch, the man sitting right next to me. I mean, not right next, but
across. That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah. One mic.
On the same couch.
On the same couch is my man, Jay Nils. What up, Nils?
I'm not a player. I just Nils a lot.
All right. Let's discuss that.
Okay. What?
The second time we recorded this. The first time we recorded it, I told you, I think you've done that one before.
Yeah, and the first time recorded, I said, well, hopefully one of our listeners will re-review the 37 episodes see if I have.
I think you should have just came off with something else.
Yeah, I'm not that quick. You understand that it takes me the entire week to come up with these.
Well, I'll tell you, I've talked to four or five people that are our friends outside of the podcast that listen to the show. Uh-huh. They all mention that they are super excited to hear what you come up with next.
Now you're going to put that pressure on me.
I don't want you to disappoint the people, man. I don't. Right. They're waiting. They're waiting for each week.
I'll come back strong next week.
All right. Welcome to the Bull Show. You're looking at the Chicago Bulls from a fan perspective. We're not experts. We're not experts. We're not insiders.
And we're not even English speaking.
We're not journalists. This is the reason why I stumbled, because I was thinking we actually have somebody who fits all three of those criteria on the podcast today.
Perfect segue.
Listen, I'm a professional.
Who would that be?
That'd be Agri Sam.
That is correct.
Insider of all insiders when it comes to the Bulls. He's a sideline reporter. He's talking to the players constantly.
He's the first repeat guest in our show's history.
Yeah, yeah. If you were listening, if you tried to trudge through it last month we had him on the podcast, had a bunch of sound issues. But through the magic of podcasting, I can tell you for a fact, because it's already happened, that it sounds good.
Yeah, and shout out to Agri Sam, you know, being willing and gracious enough to come back on.
Yeah.
He's a really good dude. A really good dude that knows a lot of stuff.
I think he has no idea how small and inconsequential our podcast is. I think he just somehow thinks because we got a sweet logo that we got a lot more swag or pull than what we do. But he definitely came on the second time, and I thank him a lot for doing it for us.
Well, we appreciate it. He probably saw us on Twitter at the Bull Show. Make sure you follow us or at Mitch Don't Lie.
Listen,
Those followers stacking up?
Listen,
I got to ask you every week.
Yeah, you know what? We're moving up. You retweeted a couple of things. I thank you for that. You know, I just feel like Mitch Don't Lie has some of the greatest pieces of American literature.
I've seen your tweets. I don't think you've applied spell check or.
Listen, man, I come from the heart, man. I don't write that stuff out. That just comes naturally. And if it comes out a little bit, you know, with some spelling errors or whatever like that, that's fine. That's fine.
All right, do you, bro.
Listen, follow me, Mitch, don't lie. This is what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, the Bull Show, it's all right, follow. It's okay. But what I suggest you do, if you're following the Bull Show, it's okay. Unfollow the Bull Show. Follow Mitch, don't lie. Listen, if the Bull Show has anything cool, I retweet it.
Unbelievable. So we're starting our first inner podcast, I think we separate account Twitter beef.
I think we should start beefing.
All right. Well,
no, I'm joking, obviously. The Bull Show.
Are you, though?
I am joking. There's no way I could come up with this hilarious internet memes. They're incredible. I couldn't even think to come up with that stuff. So
I got a lot of time on my hands sometimes.
Listen, man, it's all good.
Appreciate the love. And you know, if in addition to following us on Twitter, make sure you also check us out on one of our partnering sites. That'd be GoWhereHipHop.com, yep. BullsPodcasters.com, ShyCitySports.com, and of course Bloggable.com of SB Nation.
Yeah, so we are gonna get into it. Agri Sam in like 20. What should I play between this?
I don't know, man. So, something new, something fresh.
All right, we'll try. Yeah,
just when you thought it was safe, we came back to brawl and feel like you fought with an ape. But walked in this. All right, welcome back to the Mitch and Nils Bulls Show, episode 37. We are joined on the line, Bulls insider, Comcast sports writer, and sideline reporter, Agri Sam. Agri, how's it going?
Pretty good. The sideline reporting thing, you guys can feel free to mention that, but let's just say very amateur on that side of things.
Well, hey, it's how does it feel to be the Bull Show's first repeat guest?
I guess it feels good. You know, hopefully everything goes well this time. I'm glad you guys wanted to have me back.
No, anytime. We appreciate you coming on.
We're honored to have you. It's a milestone moment yet again for us, having repeat guests. All right, well, we'll kick things off with probably what most people want to know about outside of last night's controversial finish.
And we'll definitely get to that.
Of course, we'll get to that. I mean, we do have to talk basketball on the Bull Show. But, you know, since we have such a prestigious insider on, you know, first things first, Derrick Rose.
Yeah, we want to...
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about Rip Hamilton.
Yeah, well, I know everybody's asking you about, and I think we probably asked you last time when you were on about if he's coming back or not. We're definitely not going to bore you and our listeners with that, but we'll get a little bit more technical. Based upon your conversations with the organization, with Derrick and everybody around the team...
Coach Tibbs.
Do you think there is a drop-dead date for Derrick to be back? You know, he has to be back by this certain date or he's not going to be... playing this season?
I don't know if the organization has a drop-dead date as far as, you know, not wanting him to come back after a certain point. I think definitely if he says, hey, you know, I want to go and there's only 2 weeks left or a week left in the season, you know, that's a conversation they'll have to have, but I don't think they've, you know, ruled that out. At the same time, just knowing Derrick, knowing how cautious he's been during this whole recovery period and just knowing – you know, that he understands the burden he'll have when he comes back and the fact that the playoff intensity will be greater than the regular season. I think, you know, he might have something in his mind, or at least, you know, him and the people around him might have a date in their mind where, you know, it might be possible or it might be impossible for him to, you know, start playing again this season. If I had to pick a date for that, I would probably say Thursday's game against Portland.
Oh, wow.
Just because of the way the schedule breaks down, I think that he'd want to have at least a month under his belt. You know, let's say if it's a week or so with minutes limits, and obviously this is my speculation. This is not, you know, anything that anyone's, you know, told me for a fact. But
we were about to bust out an Agri Sam exclusive.
Yeah, we were about to be all over Twitter in like 2 minutes.
No, but I think that if he doesn't play against Portland, I mean, especially with, you know, 2 days off in between, you know, it might be tough. I mean, you have that back-to-back this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, home game and a road game in Minneapolis, you know, that would be tough. And even if you look towards next week where they have a bunch of home games, I think that, you know, the time period just wouldn't be enough for him to really get into that comfort zone, you know, with the playoffs approaching. You know, I think I told you guys this last time, I thought it was a, you know, strong possibility that he might not play this season. I'm leaning even more towards that right now. I just don't see it happening, to be honest with you. And it's not through any fault of anyone. I think that people that, you know, are blaming Derrick or blaming the organization are extremely short-sighted. It's a situation where, you know, the Bulls have made a long-term investment in him. He understands that he has a long career ahead of him. The guy's only 24 years old. And to rush back, especially after last season, I think people are forgetting last season, you know, how he rushed back from injuries and, you know, got hurt again and again. I think he's just being extra careful. And, you know, to be honest, this was not a team constructed with a championship in mind. Of course, everybody wants to win with the financial restrictions they placed upon themselves, as well as the luxury tax and everything else. I think that, you know, they did a good job assembling some pieces. You know, some people have played better than others as far as the newcomers. And obviously there have been injuries to some other guys. But I don't think this was a team that expected to compete for a championship. And we all know that Derrick is, you know, the ultimate competitor, a guy that's used to winning from high school, you know, college, everything else. So, you know, for him to come back this season, I really don't see him doing it, to be honest.
So you're saying that Malcolm Thomas is not the final piece in the championship puzzle?
Hey, I like Malcolm a lot. You know, I think Malcolm could be a keeper, you know, if he ends up having any kind of, you know, impact, not necessarily in games, but if they're impressed with what he does in practice. But, no, I don't think Malcolm is the guy that puts them over the top.
So for the Bulls fans that aren't aware, because this is actually pretty recent news, the Bulls did sign Malcolm Thomas, a.k.a. their summer league hero, to a 10-day contract. But it sounds like you're saying Thursday is now or never for the return this season.
No, that's my opinion.
Right.
You know, Derrick, if he wakes up, you know, Saturday morning and says, you know, I'm ready to go, You know, I don't think anyone's going to get in his way, but I think if you just, you know, put things together, it would make sense that Thursday would be the last day. And by no means am I saying I expect to see him on the court Thursday. I just don't think it would make as much sense after Thursday.
Now, speaking of, you know, the decision, a lot of people have talked about this being Derek's decision. Do you agree with that? Obviously, the Reggie Rose stuff after the trade deadline got a lot of attention. Is this Derek's decision? And what does his camp play, you know, agent, Adidas, his brother, a play in this whole process?
Oh, it's definitely Derek's decision. I mean, he's the one that's playing the games. And he's the one that knows his own body. Nobody can tell him, you know, how he feels. So it's definitely his decision as far as, you know, I want to play basketball. Now, after that, there has to be a longer conversation. Obviously, the Bulls would have to be involved. And when I say the Bulls, I mean from ownership all the way down to the coaching staff, the front office included. But definitely his camp will have a lot to say. I put Adidas as a separate entity. Obviously, Derek is, you know, one of their biggest endorsers. But I'm sure they'd love to be able to put a campaign around, you know, his return, especially after all the commercials that we saw earlier in the season. But I don't think they'd have a say-so in whether or not he plays. Now, as far as, you know, Reggie and B.J. Armstrong, his agent, I know Arn Tellem is, you know, the guy that a lot of people refer to in reports, but B.J. is a guy that spends a lot of time with Derek and obviously he's a former player too. I think they will have some say-so. Reggie, I think a lot of people, you know, don't understand that, you know, Reggie is a former basketball player, played college basketball. Maybe he wasn't an NBA superstar like Derek, but, you know, this is a guy that was a, you know, public league star in Chicago and played at a fairly high level in college. So, you know, this is not a completely uninformed person. And, you know, as much as people criticize his comments, you know, he's a fairly educated guy, too. I mean, he has a college degree. This is not somebody that knows nothing about the game. He's been privy to a lot of negotiations. And Derek trusts him. I mean, first and foremost, Derek, you know, that's his brother. He's known him his whole life, and he's going to listen to what he has to say and at least take it into consideration. Derek is 24. He's going to make his own decisions, too. Now, when it comes to BJ, you know, not only is he his agent, but he's also a former player. He also has a lot of experience with the Bulls, so he's going to listen to what he has to say as well. At the end of the day, though, I don't think anyone wants to stop him from playing. I think it's more, you know, people being cautious and trying to protect him from himself. Obviously, he plays really hard. You know, he plays a violent game, if you will, as far as getting to the rim and, you know, challenging big guys in the paint and everything else. So he's not going to be able to just tone that down and not, you know, and still be a factor.
Right. He is who he is.
Yeah, he is who he is. That's the way he plays. And, you know, I think that people understand, too, especially with the state of the Bulls right now, with, you know, Kirk being hurt and everything else, he's going to have a lot on his shoulders. Even if they put him on a minutes limit, when he's on the court, the offense is going to run through him. You know, he's going to have a lot of, you know, opportunities to have the ball in his hand. So I think everyone understands, you know, the bigger picture is, you know, keeping this guy healthy for the bulk of his career. And I think he understands that, too. But I also know that Derek wants to play more than anyone else. You know, that Indiana game that everyone points to where he sat on the bench, I've never seen a guy in street clothes that competitive. Maybe Kevin Garnett. Everyone in Chicago saw that during that Bulls Celtics first round series.
Talking to Ben.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. You just mentioned that Rose sat on the bench during the Indiana game. We haven't seen him on the bench since. Do you know what, you know, the requirements other than, you know, being in a suit and tie? I kind of made up the joke that maybe he just picked up his dry cleaning finally, and that's why he sat on the bench. But do you know why we haven't seen him on the bench since?
I mean, it was always something where, you know, he might sit on the bench. He could sit on the bench if he wanted to. But Derek is not a guy that wants to take attention away from his teammates, the guys who are actually playing right now. So I think that has a big part to do with it as well. And we talked to him, you know, a couple of the reporters, the Chicago guys that were on that trip, talked to him in the locker room off the record, you know, just real casual conversation. And, you know, he said it's something he probably couldn't do at home because it would just be so crazy in the United Center if he sat on the bench. As much as fans would love to see him, it would just build expectations too much. So I think that's probably a big reason we haven't seen him on the bench during home games. But as far as why Indiana, I don't think he likes those guys. I mean, going back to the playoff series and everything else, I think it was just more of a, this is a rivalry game still. And, you know, he wanted to be out there almost as an intimidating factor, you know, have those guys see him and keep him in the back of his mind, like, I'm still here and I will be back. So I think that was more the motivation for sitting on the bench against the Pacers in particular. You know, the Spurs, that was a big game. You know, the Lakers, a whole lot of these other games that we've seen, you know, they're not as much, you know, rivalry game. So maybe we'll see him against the Heat. Who knows? If he's not back in the lineup, I should say. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him on the bench there.
So it sounds like it was just the right place, right time, right opponent.
Definitely, definitely. I don't think there was any conspiracy behind it or anything like that. I think it was just more Derek wanting to be out there supporting his teammates. And, you know, his competitive juice has got the best of him. He just wants to be out there and, you know, make his presence felt.
You know, the one final Derek Rose question that I'll pitch over to you. You know, it seems like, obviously, it's a very fluid situation. One week we'll hear reports that, you know, his return is imminent, and the next week we'll get your opinion that it doesn't seem likely. Most recently, there have been some writers saying that Derrick Rose is going to be back and better than ever, which obviously is a good sign. Do you subscribe to any of those theories?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw, I talked to him in the summertime. I was in L.A. after, you know, the surgery and everything else. And, you know, he talked to me a little bit about some of the stuff he was able to do as far as, you know, weight training and conditioning. And, you know, we also briefly talked about, you know, his game, things he wants to improve. And I don't think that he's going to become a different player by any means. Like you said earlier, he is who he is. But at the same time, I think it's a great opportunity to be able to work on some other stuff that, you know, he might not have the time to do, especially, you know, coming back from injuries, playing USA basketball, everything else.
Right.
You know, if he was, you know, still healthy or technically healthy, I mean, no NBA player is really healthy after a long 82-game season. You know, he might not have as much time to work on this stuff. So I definitely think he's going to come back, you know, more cerebral. And I think Derek has a very high IQ, but even more cerebral because he's finally getting a chance to watch a lot of tape. On top of that, I think he's going to be an improved shooter. And I see him, you know, pregame when he's working on stuff, working on that floater, but with his left hand as well. So I think Derek is definitely going to have some new wrinkles to his game. And obviously there's going to be some rust to shake off. But
can
off,
you?
I think we'll see a different player.
Can you confirm if he's actually grown any taller? Because there was a report that he's actually growing, and I'm expecting him to be 7 feet when he comes back.
I heard he was at least 6'6". He got that Paul George going.
Hey, I'll say this. I'm 6'3", and Derek, you know, he's listed as 6'3", but that's no NBA height. He's probably 6'2", legit. He looks about the same to me. I'm still looking him in the eye, not looking up at him. It's not like, hey, there's Joe Kim. Oh, that's Derek. You know,
like that. So he's not working with Hakeem. He's not adding in the dream shake. He's not growing 5 or 6 inches. That's disappointing, man. That's disappointing.
I will.
I don't see that coming.
I will say this. You know, you mentioned his jumper, and I actually have seen a couple of his pregame workouts live, and you know, there is some truth to the optimism and him being back better than ever. Obviously, it's unreasonable to have him to think that'll be this year, but his jumper looks extra silky, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's a guy that holds himself to high standards, and you know, Derek never likes to miss shots when he's working out, period. But you see him just really mad. He's on a roll, like, you know, 9, 10 in a row and misses one. And he's, you know, frustrated with himself. And I remember a couple of years ago when I first started covering the team, you know, it might be more like 3, 4 in a row. So, you know, I'm definitely optimistic about him being a better shooter. And you know what? That USA experience he had with the World Championships team, you know, he talked a lot about playing, learning from Chauncey Billups. And Chauncey's a guy that obviously is a much different player. When he was younger, he was more athletic, but never at the Derek level. But he's a guy that really beats people with his smarts and his physicality. And I expect him to incorporate some of that into his game, too. You know, being able to bully guards a little bit with just his strength and not so much explosiveness, mm-hmm. which will save him from a lot of wear and tear as well.
Good stuff.
Now, maybe because I'm Southsider, I'm very interested in the Reggie Rose aspect. So this will be our last question tonight, and we'll definitely move on to the craziness that went on last night and other things going on with the Bulls roster. But when, you know, when Reggie Rose makes comments that, I don't want to say negative, but are kind of critical of the Bulls organization, is that something that you think Derek is adopting? Is that kind of the voice of the team? Or is Reggie more of a wildcat or, you know, outlier when it comes to, you know, talking about the building of the team?
Well, I look at it like this. I mean, Reggie is a Chicago guy. Like I said, he's a basketball guy. You know, he has enough of a background to know some of what he's talking about. But at the same time, he's not in that locker room. I think Derek is very loyal to his teammates and probably would like to see the Bulls, you know, add some pieces, especially some long-term guys with all the one-year contracts they have right now. But he's probably not. If he was the GM, I don't think he would take his brother's approach. I'll put it like that.
Oh, wow.
Reggie, you know, definitely speaks for himself. You know, Derek and Reggie, two different people. And, you know, he talked to us in L.A. You guys probably saw these quotes that he had about his brother being his old man, wanting to get something off his chest, and him, you know, supporting the organization. I'm sure there are times where he's frustrated looking at some of the talent around the league and not seeing that on this year's Bulls team. I think the last 2 years is a different story with the collective group that they had, and regardless of people talking about adding another superstar. But I don't think Derek is as frustrated. Now, as time goes on, if they don't upgrade that roster significantly to the point where, you know, he can compete, you know, with the LeBrons and Kevin Durant of the world who have, you know, great supporting cast members, I think then maybe he'll get frustrated. But I think Reggie, more than anything else, I don't think the timing of it, obviously, at the trade deadline was something everyone seized upon. But I don't think he necessarily was saying, you know, they have to do something now. I think it was more of a, you know, preemptive warning for the future. You need to do something in the future because my brother wants to win. I think that's really how people should interpret his comments.
Yeah, and there were reports that Reggie kind of had these feelings a little bit ago. It just wasn't the trade deadline. So it sounds like something that he may have been thinking about for a while. But moving on. Let's get off the Derrick Rose stuff. There are other Bulls that are certainly ailing, and the Bulls have not had an opportunity to be at full strength. Tell us a little bit about the improvements or lack of improvements with Taj Gibson or Rip Hamilton.
Yeah, well, Taj's situation. I know when an injury first occurred, you know, the reports were, you know, 2 weeks, you know, he'll be out. I mean, I even heard from somebody maybe 1 week and, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, everybody's injuries are different. And, you know, you've got to think that, you know, with the season the Bulls have had, and not saying that Taj is taking, you know, the regular season for granted, but I'd like to think that he's trying to be full strength for the playoffs and not come back a little bit too soon. You know, it's funny. It's almost like the Derek situation had an impact on everyone. I think Kirk, you know, well, we'll get to him later, but I think Taj is definitely a guy that, you know, sees, you know, an opportunity for this team in the postseason, and he'd rather be at full strength. And if it costs, and he's not expecting the team to lose, but even if his impact is, his lack of presence is felt right now, he'd rather, you know, be healthy going into the playoffs and, you know, be 100% to help the team win some games when it counts.
Yeah, it almost seems like.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, it almost seems like these injuries might almost be a blessing in disguise in the sense that guys will be well-rested. Just to echo your sentiments, they'll be well-rested for the playoffs and also giving a lot of guys, well, a handful of guys, more opportunity to step up.
No, definitely. I mean, I think Nazi Muhammad, who was pretty much buried on the bench, you know, Tibbs has almost been forced to go to him, and he's responded okay. You know, I'm not saying by any means Nazi's been perfect or anything like that, but, you know, he's shown some flashes of, you know, what we saw in the preseason when he looked like he was going to be a really strong contributor. So the fact that, you know, other guys can get some of those opportunities, you know, has been helpful. And, you know, Tibbs, a guy that, you know, is pretty much stuck on his rotations. You know, he might have to expand his thought process a little bit when it comes to the playoffs and, you know, using other guys that he wasn't counting on when everyone was healthy.
Now, I feel like Rip Hamilton is coming under a little bit of fire from Bulls fans. When can we expect to see him back on the court?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. And you know, full disclosure, I like Rip. You know, I was a fan of Rip.
Rip's, I like Rip, too.
One of the few guys. Yeah, he's one of the few guys. You know, I'm getting old. I'm 31 now. He's one of the few guys that's older than me that I can say, you know, I saw you play in high school and college. I was still in high school myself back then. And, you know, it's not like I'm just talking when I say that. So I have a lot of respect for Rip as a professional, the way he's handled himself in this situation. You know, I would not be surprised if we did not see Rip again. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back, you know, sooner than later. More than likely, I think Rip will be back shortly before the playoffs. But, again, I would not be surprised if they shut him down. The fact that, you know, he probably will be a free agent, I highly doubt that the Bulls will pick up his $5 million option. You know, that has something to that factors in as well. And the fact that Marco Bellinelli's played so well as a starter, both during Rip's December absence and now, you know, that has to factor in also. Jimmy Butler, you know, you can steal him some minutes at the two. You know, Luol doesn't come off the court too much, so, you know, he doesn't see that much time at small forward. Although it tends to reduce Luol's minutes a little bit, you know, more recently. But I think the fact that the Bulls have, you know, an opportunity to get a look at, you know, one of their young players for the future, as well as Marco, a guy that we could see back in Chicago next season, I think that's weighing into the fact that Rip has not been back on the court yet. So I'm not saying he's 100% or anything like that. I don't know that for a fact. But, you know, it's definitely a strange situation. But back injuries are tricky. You never know. I mean, he could be in a lot of pain right now. He could be on the mend and on the way back. We just don't know.
So possible rest in peace to Rip as a Bull.
Yeah, I'm sad about that because I really don't think that we were able to see the best of Rip Hamilton just because of injuries to Rip and injuries to Derek. I always thought that the team worked pretty well in the few games that we got to see them play together. I always thought that the ball moved really well. Rip is a really, I think, smart player.
A savvy veteran.
Savvy veteran. I know a lot of the stat guys kind of rip him, taking kind of the inefficient, so quote-unquote inefficient two-point shots a lot. But I like Rip's game. I think he's a good player. I think it would be a shame if, you know, we never got to see Rip and Derek, you know, playing significant minutes in the playoffs.
Well, definitely. I mean, I remember that last game that Derek played, the game he got hurt, you know, those two were clicking pretty well. And even, you know, throughout last season when they were on the court together, you know, I thought they had pretty good chemistry. And Rip works really well with Derek. And he's not, you know, a primary ball handling guy, but he can create a little bit and he moves so well off screens that it doesn't clog up the lane or anything for Derek's driving ability.
Well, we're talking about, you know, kind of how Rip and Derek possibly fit together. How would you project Marco and Derek playing together?
I think that would work really well, too. One thing I don't think anyone knew coming into this season was how well Marco handled the ball in pick-and-roll situations. And the fact that he might be able to, you know, put Derek off the ball a little bit could really be, you know, interesting to see. I mean, looking back at some of the two guards Derek has played with, you know, Keith Bogans, you know, Ronnie played a lot of two, or Ronnie slash Kyle, depending on who you think was more of a two, who was more of a three. You know, going back to probably Kirk Heinrich and Flip Murray, those are the last two guys I can remember Derek playing with that really, you know, could create and handle the ball and let him kind of
Flip
be
Murray.
Focused just on scoring. Yeah, Flip Murray, I know, blast from the past. But I think Marco, you know, brings some of that to the table, as well as, you know, decent size and good long-range shooting ability. I think that could be a pretty good tandem. I remember, you know, early in training camp, you know, talking to some people and, you know, them saying, you know, Derek's pretty excited about Marco's game. And obviously we all thought Derek might be back by February or something like that. But that just shows you that Derek was thinking along the same lines that, you know, this could be a guy that I could really partner with in the backcourt and we can make some things happen. I think Marco's really getting confidence, really finding his comfort zone under Tibbs. So, you know, if those two are in the backcourt together next season, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Well, the speculated starting two guard for next season and another guy whose status is unknown, Kirk Heinrich. What's the latest on him? He seems to be coming down with random injury after random injury. When will he be back in action?
Yeah, seven separate injuries this season, and some of them, well, the one that was most bizarre was the elbow injury where he popped his bursa sac and got an infection and everything else. But, you know, Kirk was on the way back from his last injury, that sore right foot that popped up literally overnight. When they were playing that Indiana game the night before, you know, it just happened. So, you know, he's really had a lot of bad luck this season. He looked like he was going to be coming back in Friday's game at Golden State, but had a setback. He practiced on the Thursday, you know, and looked okay and had a setback apparently, you know, before the next morning shoot-around. So, you know, who knows with Kirk? I know he definitely doesn't want to rush back only to be hurt again, but I know he definitely wants to be back on the court. And I think Bulls fans that really watched the team this season understand how well the offense flows when Kirk is in the lineup. He's a guy that really just organizes everything on both ends. I sound like Chip now, but he really does organize things on both ends of the court. I mean, defensively, he has a lot more size than Nate, so you know the Bulls are on a disadvantage as far as ball pressure. And we know Kirk is not a great shooter, but he seems to hit timely shots sometimes. So, yeah, I know people really want to see him back in the lineup. Hopefully, you know, he can get healthy before the postseason.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question about, you know, what effect you thought Kirk brings to this team with him on the floor. I know there's kind of been a debate between, I feel like, you know, the kind of basketball guys who, you know, definitely pay attention to the flow and chemistry and the way the offense works, and kind of some of the stat guys who struggle to see
his
performance on paper. But I think I'm a convert. You know, I definitely think that this team works a little bit better with Kirk, so I'm definitely happy to see him come back.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, his toughness, you know, he's not the most vocal guy in the world, but he leads by example, and I think other people really just respect him. When you look at, you know, Lou, Carlos, those two in particular, they play really well when Kirk is in the lineup. He just knows how to find them in their sweet spots, and, you know, he just has developed really good chemistry with those two guys in particular. Not saying that, you know, Nate hasn't had some positive moments this season. In fact, a lot of positive moments, but, you know, he's more of a score first point guard, and, you know, he's probably best suited to be that spark plug off the bench. That's what they signed him to do. Unfortunately, Kirk has just not been healthy. You know, and you talked about the stat guys and everything. I'm not anti-advanced stats. I want to make that clear.
Okay.
But one thing I don't think people take into consideration is, you know, you can look at all the advanced stats in the world, all the metrics and everything else, but some things, you know, you just can't explain, you know, by numbers. You know, basketball is a game of feel, a game of chemistry, you know, and sometimes, you know, guys who don't get it done as far as advanced stats, you know, they're making a huge impact on the court. So, you know, Kirk definitely seems like one of those guys to me. And you mentioned Rip earlier. I mean, I don't know what his, you know, his heyday in Detroit, what his advanced stats were, but I'm sure, you know, he had a similar style of play back then, so I'm sure they probably weren't the best because he takes those quote-unquote inefficient two-point jumpers. But, you know, he definitely was a winner, and I think that's the most important thing in basketball, obviously.
Yeah, while Nate can get you 34 points like he did last night, I'm definitely of the mindset or preference of having a guy like Kirk distribute the ball, get more guys involved, because then you have hopefully more weapons down the stretch, especially for the personnel of this team.
Exactly. And then when Nate comes in off the bench, you know, playing in second unit guys especially, let him go crazy. You know, let him be that, you know, primary scorer off the bench. And, you know, other guys who started are still in rhythm. And if he doesn't have it going, you know, you can limit his minutes. But unfortunately, Tibbs doesn't really have that choice right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Marcus is a guy with some potential, but he's also very young. He just turned 20 years old. So, you know, to entrust the whole offense to him, you know, would be a stretch right now. You know, I'm not somebody who's really critical of Tibbs. I think he's a fantastic coach. But one thing I don't think that, and he did it last year too with Jimmy. Obviously, he had Ronnie and other guys ahead of him. But I don't think he sometimes trusts the young guys enough to let them make mistakes and play through their mistakes when early in the season, when that development would be critical at the end of the season. So maybe if Marcus got a few more minutes early on, you'd have another option at the point that you could distribute a little bit more. But obviously, Marco has done a really good job with the ball in his hands as well. So things work out for the best, and that's why I'm not an NBA coach.
Well, well, maybe Tibbs would have put in Marcus more in last night if he'd remembered which team he was rooting for. I don't know if you saw the replay, but when JaVale McGee threw down that, I'm calling it the thrunk, a throw-in dunk. Over Joe Kim, it looked like Marcus had a momentary lapse of judgment.
Why are you hating on him, man? That was exciting, man.
He got excited, but he's a professional basketball player.
I was excited, man. I can't hate him.
He's a kid, you know. I think he just kind of, you know, sometimes your rookie year especially, you know, you see amazing things that you're used to seeing, you know, in your dorm room in college or at home when you're in high school, and you forget how to act. So
hey, I don't.
Teammates haven't seen that.
I don't blame him, but the rookie better bring some extra donuts to practice tomorrow morning.
You know who I do blame? Joe.
Too, you know. bring more soap and everything else for the locker room, you know.
So, you know, obviously referring back to last night's game, let's get into the controversy a little bit. You know, despite pretty much having a six-man rotation, the Bulls took the hottest team outside of Miami to the brink last night, taking them to overtime. And depending on who you asked, based on the referee's decision to not or go ahead and review a replay. The Bulls nearly ended the Nuggets' 11-game win streak.
Yeah, I mean, they really got the short end of the stick last night. Obviously, it was a controversial sequence of events. Kufos, to me, that's goaltending. You know, the ball was on the rim, he touched it, that's goaltending.
Unquestionably, yep.
The interpretation of it, that people are explaining now, I wasn't aware of that. I don't think a lot of players or coaches were aware of that. And if that's the case, we might as well go with the international rules, which the NBA apparently is considering, with the ball being alive when it's on the rim. As far as Joe's situation, I don't want to say the refs caved the pressure, especially, with the Nuggets being the road team and everything. Right. But granting them that timeout and then going back to review it, that seemed a little bit bogus, for lack of a better word, to me. I really think the Bulls got the short end of the stick on that one. And, unfortunately, this is the NBA. They're not going to replay the game or reverse the score or the decisions or anything afterwards. But, it seemed very confusing. And I'm not sure the referees, put things into the correct context. You want to go by the rules and everything, but I don't know if George Karl would have been able to challenge them on that himself at that right. time, whether it's the Kufos play or Joe's situation, which was a lot more, I thought it was a goaltend, but it was a lot more questionable and open for debate than Kufos' play. So, unfortunately, the Bulls got the short end of the stick, and in this tight Eastern Conference playoff race, one game really does matter at this point in the season.
Oh, definitely. And what I was salty about is, you saw the NBA come out and apologize essentially for the whole Kobe Bryant, Dante Jones fiasco less than, I think, 36 hours after the play happened. I haven't seen anything. Has the NBA come out and said anything about the play and the call?
I think they're standing pat.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything yet. I mean, I think they're just going to, stand by it as far as right now. But, unless something's happened since I've been on the phone with you guys. But, it's one of those unfortunate situations, really. There's nothing you can do about it at this point. I'm sure the Bulls are steaming hot still, but you got to move on. I mean, you're in the stretch run of the season. If you let this one game kind of derail you, and we know they were struggling before that Golden State game, so if you let this kind of derail you, it would really be bad. But, you can take – I know Tibbs and those guys are not really the moral victory types, but you can take some heart in the fact that, being that short-handed against an athletic Nuggets team that destroyed them in Denver, they played that well and played them even, basically. You can't say they won, even though they probably should have. But at the same time, they played – they had a really good showing. Now, the one thing I don't think people are focusing on, probably with that Kufos play, is the lapse that let him get an uncontested offensive rebound. Mm-hmm. Knowing Tibbs, I'm sure that's something he's going to bring up to his team, too.
Now correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, you had the night off last night. And
correct.
I'm sure you saw Tibbs' outburst, which was pretty epic.
I thought he was going to jail. I thought I was going to see him in jail. The next day, I work in a courthouse. I thought I was going to see Tibbs the next day.
Now, so Agri, were you disappointed that you weren't at the game to witness the hysteria live, or were you actually happy that you didn't have to experience the wrath of Tibbs?
Well, I look at it two ways. I'm definitely disappointed. I take my off days when I get them, but I'm definitely disappointed that I didn't get to see that live, to be able to talk to players and coaches and everything right afterwards. I did talk to some people to think about it, just to get their take on everything, not to write about it, just to, get opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was good seeing it on TV, because when you're on a deadline like that, you don't always get a chance to watch the replays that closely. You're still writing everything. You want to make sure you get everything, on paper or on computer, I guess. But it was interesting to, see the interpretation from, Stacey and Neil on TV, and being able to, watch it from multiple angles like that without having to worry about writing. I did like that, because usually after games, especially if there's something I want to see, I'm up till 2 a.m. watching the replay. So it definitely was a different perspective.
All right. Well, we've gone a little bit long, and we'll let you go on this. We have about 16 games left in the regular season. Based on everything we've talked about, the likelihood that Derrick Rose isn't coming back, but how Heinrich and Taj are just around the corner, what looks like a relatively soft schedule to wrap up the regular season, Where do you see the Bulls finishing in the East?
That's a tough question. Obviously, a lot depends on how other teams do. I look at a team like, you know, Indiana right now. I think they're continuing to surge. And then you look at a New York that, you know, has their own injury issues and, you know, has struggled a little bit, even though they had a great win against Utah the other night. I can see the Bulls, and you have to take into consideration Brooklyn and Atlanta. I can see the Bulls finishing. I mean, this is not really going to answer your question, but anywhere between probably fifth and sixth. I'll say between fifth and sixth. Well, not between, either fifth or sixth. But
it sounds
I don't know if
that were the case, it sounds like the Bulls would be better off sliding down to that sixth spot to avoid Miami until the Eastern Conference Finals, if they get that far.
Oh, without a doubt. I think sixth or seventh is where you want to be. But, again, this is Tibbs we're talking about. He's not going to have his guys rest, you know, because of seeding purposes. If anything, he'd have somebody rest. You know, just because you know, injuries or, you know, just giving them an extra breather before the playoffs. But I definitely think, though, that they're going to try to get their rhythm back going, and that means Tibbs is going to continue to push. You guys probably saw, you know, fairly epic, maybe not on the same level as Albert last night, but fairly epic press conference after that Sacramento game when he said he's going to keep driving those guys. That's the only way he knows how to do it. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to, you know, take any games off or anything like that towards the end of the season. I see them pushing, you know, to get as high as a seed as possible. I mean, that's been the goal the last couple of years. It continues to be the goal. Win as many games in the regular season as you can. So if a couple of other teams, you know, end up playing, you know, some of their bench guys down the stretch, you know, that's an opportunity for the Bulls to pick up games. And, you know, it might not be really that fortunate for them if they end up, you know, getting past a first-round opponent and playing Miami. But, you know, they're not worried about that right now. And to be honest, I think if I'm the Bulls, I'd rather play Miami in that second round than maybe an Indiana team that – and they're not thinking like this, but I would not want to lose to an Indiana team in the playoffs. And I'm not saying they should be scared of them or anything like that, but I don't want Indiana having any kind of mental edge. I mean, aside from winning the Central Division, which looks like a lock at this point, but you never know. I don't want Indiana having that mental edge going into next season. We beat you guys in the playoffs with or without Derrick Rose. You know, we still have that one up on you, or now it's even, I should say. I don't want Indiana having that edge from the Bulls. I want, you know, Miami took us out again. Miami takes everyone out, but we'll be back for them too.
Is Miami, is Boston still a factor?
I think so. I think with the right matchups, I think Boston can definitely give some people trouble. I mean, I'm not a Heat homer or anything like that. They're just that good. So I don't see, you know, Boston giving them problems. But everybody else in the East, yeah, they could definitely be a factor. Avery Bradley, you know, the fact that he's in there with that pressure defense, I mean, that disrupts a lot of point guards. And we all know it's a point guard-driven league right now. So I think Boston definitely could be a factor. Jeff Green can be half of what he was last night. I think they definitely have a chance against certain teams. But, no, I don't see them making, like, a deep run or anything, but they could really disrupt some things in the East.
I think your uncertainty is just a huge implication of just how wide open it is in the East. You know, you mentioned it five or six, but in my opinion, the Bulls could finish anywhere from two through eight. I mean, there are just so many variables with injuries and inconsistencies and really how weak the East is. So at this point, everything's in play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost like the NCAA tournament. You know, the East, besides Miami again, you know, you never know what can happen. I mean, the eight teams are pretty much locked in. I don't think Toronto is going to go on some 10-game winning streak or anything like that. But even when you look at Milwaukee, we'll see what happens, you know, with J.J. Redick, you know, how he gels with the Bucks now. But I think they're pretty dangerous. The way Brandon Jennings is playing, you know, looking to be more of a playmaker, and Monte Ellis is getting back, you know, his scoring, the scoring touch that he had in Golden State. Larry Sanders, obviously, is a beast on the inside. Ilya Sova, you know, he's starting to gain his confidence back. I think they're a team that could give some people problems, too. So, again, 2-8 in the East, you know, like you guys said, I think it's really a crapshoot. You never know what's going to happen.
Last question. Miami Heat, 23 wins in a row. Do they get to 33 and beyond?
You know, I'd like to say yes, just the way they're playing right now. But as that pressure mounts, and this is the NBA, I mean, you've seen the Heat and dominant teams, period, lose to really bad teams. I mean, the Wizards beat the Heat and the Bulls at the end of last season. I mean, I'd like to say that they'll remain focused and everything else, but it's one injury, you know, one guy getting injected early, you know, foul trouble, whatever, you know, that can change the tenor of the game. So it's hard for me to say that they're going to break that record with all the attention given to it right now. Although, you know, they're playing, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else, I just can't see it. I can see the Bulls, maybe San Antonio, you know, even a team like Orlando that's given them fits this season, you know, knocking them off.
Yeah,
you
know, Vucevic has had like 33 wins. Yeah, Vucevic, I think, has been averaging 20 and 20 against them.
Yeah, yeah. He had, what, like 30 rebounds in the first game?
Yep,
so,
yep.
Yeah, I could definitely see, you know, one. I mean, they're playing Cleveland. What's that, their next game?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Cleveland's a good team by any means, but, you know, with the anti-LeBron sentiment there, you never know. They could have the game of their lives.
Yeah. All right, Agri. Well, that wraps up our time with you. We appreciate you coming back on yet again.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
It's our pleasure. That's Agri Sam of Comcast SportsNet. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at CSN Bulls Insider. Read his stuff on Comcast SportsNet, as well as catch him on the sidelines at most Bulls home games.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.